That's what we need. And harmony. And harmony. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. The VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our Kiwi collaborator segment today, we have a very special guest for you. His name is Mohammed Hassan from Egypt, and he's currently living in New Zealand. And he's been speaking at protests and public meetings of late about the recent Egyptian crisis, which if you don't haven't heard, you must be retarded. Welcome, Mohammed, to the show.
Welcome. It's very nice to be here.
Oh, yeah, mate. Pleasure to have you. Now, just the kind of personal story, I mean, you've come to New Zealand from Egypt. I mean, how did you kind of get to where you are now?
Well, pretty much I came here in 1997. I was 8 years old when I came. And the reason we came here is because my parents were kind of fed up with the political situation that was in Egypt. I mean, my dad found it very difficult to work in that kind of environment because there was a lot of corruption. There was there wasn't a lot of kind of human rights or any kind of chance for anyone to appeal if they've been wronged in any way. And so also the idea that he wanted me and my brother and my sister to kind of have an opportunity to grow up in a more democratic environment with a better education system.
Which would be New Zealand. Now, see, we'd argue that, but but of course, we don't get shot with tear gas grenades that say made in the USA.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not yet.
Relatively, we have a better system. Yeah.
Relatively, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, of course, the New Zealand education system does have its pluses and minuses, but of course, it's nothing compared to the Egyptian education system, which has been deteriorating over the years. And it's right now it's very, very shocking the state that it's in.
Well, specifically, I mean, could you cite some examples of just how it's been degraded? I mean, was it once good and is now bad, or has it always been pretty crap?
Well, I mean, like back when my parents were studying back in Egypt, I mean, they tell me that it was a very good educational system, but it seems that over the years. Because of the corruption of the throughout the government, and of course the down trickling of corruption throughout all aspects of society, the education system has really suffered a lot. And I mean, I'll just give you a very simple example. I have a few cousins who are studying now. I have recently finished high school, and throughout their high school years, most of them had to take private tuition alongside their schooling in order to just pass. And this is not something that's uncommon. This is something where almost 80% of high school students would have to have private tutoring.
So we're talking about like a system that eroded. Did it happen very, very quickly, or was it then? Because what I've found out is that whenever the World Bank gets involved in your country, or a foreign power broker comes and gets involved, everything then starts going downhill. I mean, did this degradation start about 30 years ago when Mubarak started getting supported by the US?
Definitely. I mean, it was something that has been degrading steadily over the last 30 years. This is not something that's new, but
well, that's the wonderful thing about foreign ownership, is that everything in your country becomes just that much crapper. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. Our very special guest is Mohammed Hassan, explaining about the Egypt situation, and we'll be right back after the break.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back especially to our listeners in Egypt. Chugging back your Coca-Cola brand tear gas. It's a bit rough. Our very special guest joining us live from New Zealand is Mohammed Hassan from Egypt. Mohammed, welcome back.
Welcome, thank you.
All right. Now, your personal views on this, I mean, how did the Egypt revolution kind of begin? I mean, what was the real driving force behind it? And in my observations, it's predominantly recently been about the food prices, because now meat is basically unaffordable and tomatoes are about to join that list.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is something that really began from the youth and from the grassroots. There has been a lot of youth movements over the last couple of years trying to get people to kind of wake up and start protesting and start striking against the government. But it has been very difficult for them to do so because the government has been very aware of any kind of anti-government activity, and they've been quick to crack down on it. But I think after the, especially after the Tunisian uprising and revolt, there has been kind of a change and a kind of spark of hope that erupted within the Egyptian people. And all of a sudden, you see all these people who maybe 2 weeks ago would not have thought of ever coming out into the streets and doing this kind of thing. You see them coming out in the millions because they found their voices again. And I think that the Tunisian people are to thank for that.
Well, it would have served as some description of inspiration, right? But of course, it's kind of like a domino effect as far as I see it, because not only did Tunisia erupt, then Egypt, but now also in Yemen and Jordan. And incidentally, all four of these countries have had U.S.-supported dictators for the last 30 years.
Precisely, precisely. I mean, I honestly cannot think of a country in the Middle East right now that is not in need of some social reform and that does not have a people that do want social reform. And so I guess, especially when people in other countries see these things happening, first in Tunisia, then in Egypt, you see them kind of gain their courage back to kind of get out and speak up because they can finally see a solution to their worries and to their situation.
Well, the protest movements, well, we basically look at it somewhat cynically, I must admit, because we don't see terribly large amounts of organizations happening as a result of the protest. It just seems kind of like the result's more or less going to just be, oh, well, let's bring in a new form of tyranny to replace the old one, to restore order, but at least we got rid of Mubarak. And the only reason why we started protesting in the first place is because the food prices were too high before Tunisia uprooted and before the food prices got up. We were perfectly happy to deal with tyranny.
On the contrary, this thing has been brewing for a very long time, but the food prices was something that kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, in a sense, was that the people were never happy with the situation. And what you're seeing now is the fact that this whole movement is from the people. It's not from a certain organization. It's not from a group that's leading these protests. And I think that's a good thing because it doesn't leave any room for anyone to kind of take over with their personal agendas. Now, on the other hand, of course, this does leave a question of who is going to take over or who is going to make these social reforms once the government is out of power. And I guess that is a question that's up until now has been left unanswered. But I think for the people themselves, their role in this is to just revolt and to protest and to demand change. Once that happens, there are countless opposition groups who have already begun meeting with each other in order to try and create some kind of unity coalition to tackle these issues once the government is out of power. But right now, that is the issue that people are still facing.
Have there been any sort of local councils that have formed as a result of this unrest, like to take charge of their communities or their workplaces or anything like that?
Well, there has been on two different fronts. In Tahrir Square, where the main protests are happening, there is a revolutionary council that has been created mainly by the youth in order to kind of keep kind of control over the protests and to see where to go from there. But that's just in terms of the current protesting. In terms of the individual communities, I have heard countless stories of neighborhood watch groups that have been set up to tackle the issue of vandalism and looters that have erupted in some of the areas in Cairo and across the country. Everywhere across the country, you see that the people themselves kind of taking responsibility for things that are happening and taking responsibility for the things that the country's security should have been there for, but because of the security has been largely unseen over the last week now, it has been up to the people to try and take over these things. You see people who are working the night shifts, patrolling the streets, and you see people who are working as traffic officers to try and keep the country flowing, keep everything in order, until the security and the police return, whenever that may be.
Well, and if the security and police return to actually serve the people rather than the president, which they've been trained to do.
exactly.
Well, see, this is the difficulty when you're dealing with authoritarian regimes, is that those who have all the guns and the batons and whatnot are always serving causes contrary to what the people actually want. Wouldn't you find that very interesting, right, is because it's their country too?
Precisely, and the thing is that's why, I mean, it is difficult to assume that all police forces are corrupt. There is definitely the corrupt side of it, and there is the police forces that are actually genuinely trying to support the people. But within this kind of system, these kinds of people are it's very difficult for them to stand out in the massive corruption that has swept across the country for the last couple of years. And at the same time, I think the most important thing right now is the situation of the army, because the army, for the last 2 weeks, yes, they've been in the country trying to keep control and trying to keep things from getting violent, but at the same time, they've been really, really sitting on the fence, and they haven't shown any kind of leniency, whether towards the government or the people. And I think until that changes, the protesting isn't going to have much of an effect on the government.
Well, what do you see as a possible outcome, anyway, in the best-case scenario?
And the best-case scenario, I mean, Mubarak definitely has to step down. That is the first thing, and that is what the people are demanding for. They are refusing to make any kinds of negotiations or any talks with the government until that happens. Once that happens, then an interim president can come in, one that the people are happy with, in order to set up free and democratic elections over the next couple of months. Of course, this thing is not going to fix itself overnight. This is going to be something that the country as a whole has to work towards for the next year, maybe a couple of years. But eventually, once the Mubarak regime and the National Democratic Party is uprooted and removed from the country, the people finally have a breath of fresh air to try and put in place the system that they want for themselves.
What about the powers behind these? Most people know that politicians are just figureheads for a larger power structure. What about the powers behind the current structure? Do you not think they'll find another way to find their way into the new system, whatever it may be?
I mean, definitely. I mean, that these people kind of tend to never go away. But I think over the last, over the last 60 years, because there has never really been an opportunity for democratic elections in Egypt, it has been very easy for these figures to kind of take control and to put in place the kind of puppets and the kind of regimes that they want for themselves. But when you do have a popular uprising and you do have a system that is removed from power and a democratic system put in place, it becomes very, very difficult for these people to try and take control.
Well, you know, I would argue that in the West, America has some sort of democracy, some semblance of democracy. They have a democratic election system. Whether they rig elections or not doesn't really matter, because all the possible outcomes are with the bankers. You know, and in New Zealand, we have a democratic election system. I couldn't give a damn whether Labour or National get in. You know, they're both trash in my mind, and they're both going to peddle the same. The fundamentals of this country will not change, and never have changed over the last 30 years. Haven't changed since Norman Kirk, regardless of who's been elected in a democratic system. So I'd argue that democracy just divides and conquers the people. I'm not for it at all, but.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I fully agree with you. But I think for the people of Egypt right now, their main priorities is the ability to have a better economic system and a better social system. Even if the system doesn't end up changing completely, I think it is at least better for the people if they have a country that they can at least have some say in. And a country that can make a lot of reforms economically. Because at the end of the day, it's the people at the grassroots level and the people and the working class that really suffer because of this. And despite the politics or the foreign policy of a country, it is always the internal policy that affects its people the most.
International influence have enormous amounts of power with subjugating countries, particularly, you know, if they can bribe and or keep dictators like Mubarak in power via their donations and whatnot like that, like Abrams effing tanks. And one thing I'd want to know is, because of the fact that the Egyptian populace is now so ticked off and they are so determined to not negotiate and get Mubarak out, where is that non-negotiating ability going to taper off, I wonder? I mean, are they then going to get some other dictator in and then they'll go, okay, it's not Mubarak, that's all good? Or are they going to go, no, we want Mubarak out and we want a free society and we want the ability to vote and we want the, and we will not negotiate on these points? Do you think that the Egyptian populace has that kind of staying power?
I really hope so, and I believe in the people, and I believe in their intelligence should give them that kind of insight into the how this thing should work. And if we take Tunisia as an example, up until today, the people of Tunisia are still protesting for change, despite the fact that their president has left, and the many of the members of parliament have also been removed, but the people realize that this does not entail positive change in the country, that they need actual democracy and they need actual freedom of speech and freedom of choice when it comes to who governs their country. And so that really gives me hope to what will happen in Egypt beyond the removal of Mubarak.
Well, you know, I mean, that would be hopeful. But in the greatest sense, I mean, people are like demonizing the Muslim Brotherhood and all of this, but this isn't an Islamic protest movement, is it?
By no means is it. The Islamic Brotherhood themselves have come out and said that even though some of our members are protesting with the Egyptian people, we are not protesting as an organization. Because we fully realize that any efforts that we make in aiding this revolution can be used against us, can be used against the Egyptian people, and we do not want to take that away from them. Now, if you look at the actual protests, the way it has been structured kind of makes it very, very visible the unity between the Christians and the Muslims in the country. This is very surprising because of the tensions that have been happening between the two groups over the last couple of years. But it has really proved that this is a very secular movement, and it has nothing to do with religion.
most democratic movements are secular, you find that, and then most Republican movements tend to have a religious factor. But I mean, it's kind of odd to me, because I'd like to see New Zealand work towards becoming a republic and gaining sort of total independence from the crown. Mm-hmm. And you know, Egypt gained that. Or you know, when did Egypt become a republic? In the early 1950s, 1953.
Yeah.
The time that the Americans were into Iran and going after Mohammed Mossadegh, you guys became a republic. But then there's been this democratic movement going on for the last about 10 years, in the hope for more civil liberties. So it kind of swings and roundabouts, in the sense that I'd like to see New Zealand move away from a democracy and towards a republic in order to gain civil liberties. You see what I mean?
Yeah, you know, but, definitely.
It just depends on who's. It always depends on the power structure behind whatever dressing we give a society, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever we call it, it just depends on the individuals involved. Yeah. But I mean, you've got a nation of 80 million people, and your country is just, you know, has a history of a pretty strong history of revolt, right?
That's right. But unfortunately, the most recent one and the most significant one in our history, which is the revolt that happened in the 50s, it was very much hijacked by the military. And the regime that was put in place is very much the regime that's still in place now. What happened was the first president that was put in place, Gamal Abdel Nasser, his vice president took over when he died, and then Mubarak, who was the vice president of Anwar Sadat, took over when he died. And so ever since then, despite the fact that we had a revolution, We did not end up seeing any change in the actual structure. The country did become a republic, but at the same time, it was just a face for pretty much the same kinds of authoritarian rule that had before that we had before when we were a kingdom. And so I think it's very important for people to recognize that and to make sure that the army, whenever they do decide to make their move, is not going to be a similar move to the kinds of actions that they had with the last revolution.
Well, you know, no revolution is easy, and no revolution comes about for very simple, friggin' obvious reasons. It's usually a combination of factors. Our very special guest coming out live from New Zealand as part of our Kiwi Collaborator section is Mohammed Hassan, and we'll be back right after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Vanilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, spare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special Kiwi collaborator for today is Mohammed Hassan, joining us from Auckland. Mohammed, welcome back.
Thank you.
Right. Now, the Egyptian situation. Now, it's been blown way, way into the media stratosphere, and Western media just loving it, you know? It's just like, oh, look, all these scary Arabs, they're protesting. Oh, we should be afraid. We should vote Republican.
Definitely. It's very funny how the American media seizes any kind of opportunity to, well, especially right-wing media, they seize any kind of opportunity to promote the Republicans.
Well, yeah, I mean, and one thing that I'd like to address here is how Western media actually views the protesting and all of that kind of jazz, because I've been keeping up with the play on Al Jazeera a little bit, and the coverage is so much more superior, and they've actually got information, they've got real interviews from people, whereas Western media, on the other hand, like the Fox News and the CNN and the TV3 that we've got here in New Zealand, it's just basically like just footage of the protests. And nothing more, you know? Oh, Mubarak should step down. There's no information, really. And I was wondering, is this part of Mubarak's information blackout, is to make sure that Western media don't report anything in reality?
Well, I'd be very surprised if his personal reach goes that far, but I think it's definitely a part of American foreign policy and the way they control their own public's view of what goes on in the Middle East.
Well, you know, and the Middle East is kind of like this very, very, I don't know, it's sort of like this fantasy world, right, to people in the West, because most of them have never been there, and I admit that I've never been there, so they don't really understand what's going on. Now, in general, I mean, the culture's not entirely all that different, really, is it? I mean, they've got KFC, they've got McDonald's, and, you know, it's just a little bit different, you know. You accept you're
well, that's not meant to be the culture.
No. Well, I mean, like, it's a general sort of pseudo-capitalist culture, though, isn't it?
I know, definitely. I mean, and the thing that over the last century we've seen with globalization, it has kind of brought the entire world together. And it is very sad that up until now, the way the Middle East and that region is being portrayed within Western media, and I mean, it was Edward Said who coined the phrase Orientalism, and I think this has been very important in terms of the way Western media, especially American media, has been showing the events that have been happening in the Middle East over the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just feel that whenever you have a violent uprising, it's an opportunity for a lot of different forces to have influence. This is why I'm generally against violent uprisings. It's because you know, out of war and chaos is historically how the main power players on this earth have gained more power. And so, you know, if I were a betting man, I would say that that would be the same in this instance. That you'll find you know, a people, a sort of resistance face on the same old powers that be will come out on top of the situation. And as opposed to a just spreading information, just discourse like this show, like what you can find across the internet, YouTube, all the blogs that are set up these days, that actually educate people as to the, you know, ways and means of our political enemies. And so it's just a change of our state of mind and a change of our ways that come from our beliefs, rather than necessarily having to pick up weapons and go out and cause turmoil. Because, you know, out of turmoil, the order will always form.
Well, that's what I find interesting, though, about this particular one, is that it was a peaceful revolution until Mubarak's supporters came in and started opposing the main protest guild, you know? It's like they're setting them up, they're driving. I saw a video of a van driving through a whole swath of protesters and just knocking them all out of the way. It was freaking brutal, man. And so it's like, what was it? When your government makes peaceful opposition impossible, it makes violent opposition inevitable.
That is exactly what they want, right?
No, but that is very true. But I mean, the thing is that when these so-called pro-Mubarak protests came out, myself and a lot of my Egyptian colleagues, we found this very, very comical because, as an Egyptian, we know for certain that there is no such thing as a pro-Mubarak supporter. They do not exist. The only people that do want him to stay in power are the businessmen and the upper class that are benefiting from the corrupt regime that he's put in place. Otherwise, I mean, 40% of the country lives under the poverty line. And so when you get anti-revolutionary protesters such as these, it is very easy to see through it for what it actually is, which is a ploy by the dictatorship to try and show this as a violent revolution. But what it actually is a very, very peaceful one. And I think, especially over the last couple of days, the protesters in Tahrir Square have stressed this. There were calls earlier to get people to march towards the presidential palace in order to try and physically oust President Mubarak, but the majority of people refused, and because they said that they wanted this to remain a peaceful protest, and because I think the majority of people in the country are aware that any damage that is being done throughout these protests is being done to their own homes and to their own land and to their own society. And so they're very aware that if this thing has to happen, it has to happen peacefully.
Yeah, well, I would hasten a guess that perhaps Mubarak actually bribed a whole bunch of people with, you know, a few loaves of bread or whatever, to say, like, right, go out there and attack those protesters. Right, look at all the stuff that I've given you. Ha-ha. You know, something cloak and dagger like that would be my assumption. Of course, I've got no evidence to support this, but that is what happens all throughout history, is that
there have been videos that surfaced of people that have come out and said that we were bribed to be a part of this protest. And the thing is that these things are they're not new to any of the Egyptian public. These government cronies tend to always surface during election times to kind of threaten people and to cause social unrest. During these times, to scare people away from voting for any opposition or to speak out against electionary fraud. And so the idea that the government would use undercover thugs to cause this kind of unrest is nothing new at all.
Well, that reminds me of how Osama bin Laden, for some reason, manages to make a video every American election.
Exactly. I find that very ironic.
Despite the fact that Benazir Bhutto said on an interview on Al Jazeera that her head of intelligence assassinated him, and then she died in an assassination herself. Coincidentally, of course, there's no conspiracy here. You know, you can't think this way, but don't have to go home.
I was going to ask Mohammed to enlighten us to their sort of religious composition these days of Egypt. There's a lot of there's Coptic Christians, Orthodox Christians, are there not? As well as followers of Islam.
Well, the majority of the public are Muslims. It's about 80%, and the rest of it is about 10% Coptic Christians. And the rest is a composition of Jewish people and several other smaller groups, but yeah, the two main religious groups are the Coptic Christians and the Muslims.
Sunni in particular.
Yes, they're Sunni.
So you don't think there's any expression of people's belief systems in this uprising? I mean, is there any hinting that it's going to be a Sunni regime that takes control in the aftermath, for instance? Or
definitely not. I think people felt that they were very religiously oppressed during the Mubarak regime, both the Christians and the Muslims. I mean, with the Christians, that for years now that they've been protesting against the government because the government is not giving them enough rights to build churches and to even make renovations to current churches. And with the Muslims, despite the fact that the majority of the country is Muslim, the government has been cracking down on youth, especially that they see becoming more religious, attending sermons, even growing their beards, that kind of thing, all under the guise of anti-terrorism. And so for the last decade or so, the country has become very, very religiously oppressed.
Yeah, well, I find this is very interesting, is that movement that you join, if it's some description of a movement that's trying to do something good or right, or if it's not fully in support of the government or some description of government organization itself, it gets added onto a terror list. And I found it very interesting. Today, we don't actually have any terrorist organizations, but we've got thousands of terrorist organizations. Oh, the terrorists! The terrorists are going to get us, you know? For F's sake, I'm sick and tired of this phony war on terror, you know? I mean, come on. What are you gonna, it's like having a war on war. How can you do that? It's ridiculous. And the whole chasm of retarded analysis by the people that are like the pundits and the reporters and all of that just makes me sick most of the time. I'm surprised that my television is still in one piece. You know, I've thrown many things at it. You know, and I presume that the media frustration exists in Egypt as well. Well, not anymore because it's all been shut down.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, over the last couple of years, Egypt has seen many journalists imprisoned. Channels shut down and journalists by very highly respected journalists fired from their positions only because they start hinting at fraud and corruption within the government. And it's not even anyone speaking in the voice of religion. It's just anyone speaking anything that does not go along with the interests of the ruling party and interests of Mubarak that they've been cracked down on. And many, many people have... actually, that's an interesting point. One of the other major things that Egyptian people have been suffering from under the Mubarak regime is this police state that has been put in place, where at any moment... a person can be arrested anywhere on the streets and taken to a police station where they can be kept there and interrogated for weeks on end for absolutely no reason, and their family would have no idea where they are.
Hey, well, sounds just like the kind of freedom our listeners enjoy in the United States under the Barack H.O. Barry regime. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Mohammed Hassan, our Kiwi collaborator for today. And we'll be right back after the break on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, where you can listen to our fabulous archives, particularly our Kiwi collaborators section, where we have probably interviewed more activists than any other radio station in this nation's history. Maybe I'm being full of myself there, but certainly quite a few. And adding to that list, our very special guest coming out live from Auckland is Mohammed Hassan, who is a fabulous Egyptian fella. Mohammed, welcome back.
Hello.
Yeah. Now, the joke nowadays is that Mubarak is organizing a big transfer for all the Egyptian citizens to move to Saudi Arabia, where tyranny is tolerated. You know, and I was wondering, you know, I mean, how many people, the Tunisian president has fled to Saudi Arabia, and Mubarak is now talking about it. I mean, come on, is that the U.S. stronghold in the Middle East now? I would probably say so, considering they're all buddy-buddy with the Bush family. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, definitely. I mean, ever since the 70s, they've had very, very strong economic ties. And ever since then, it's I would definitely say that Saudi Arabia has been the strongest ally of America in the Middle East.
Yep. And it's so intricate, the connections. I mean, the oil industry is a very, very corrupt organization in the first place, you know. So any country that's really, really heavily demanding of its own oil reserves and things like that, you can assume that it's got some description of authoritarian regime in order to maintain the status quo in its trading with America. And one thing I've considered to be very, very interesting of late is the fact that this sort of revolution that started in Tunisia is now spilling over. And now here's an article in here from the LA Times. Clamor for change now reaches Iraq. Protests against poor government services break out in Baghdad and other cities. Prime Minister Nouri Maliki announces he'll cut his pay in half and later vows not to seek a third term. So, are we seeing the start of a Middle East-wide revolution?
I really hope so. I mean, this we can already see protests erupting in several countries. You see it in Jordan, you see it in Algeria, and you see it in Yemen. And I think, especially after the departure of Ben Ali and the soon-to-be departure of Mubarak, a lot of the Middle Eastern leaders are kind of... they're shaking right now because they can see this happening in their own countries. And so a lot of them are already starting to make as many reforms as possible to kind of calm down the people before they erupt like they have in Egypt and like they have in Tunisia.
Yeah. Like, please let us keep dictating to you. I give you food. I give you water.
And I mean, the president of Yemen has already come out and said that he's not going to seek it another term. And this is only after a couple of thousand protesters. But because they can see the repercussions that have happened in Egypt and in Tunisia, where the people have not backed down on their demands, and they're wanting to see this thing to the end. And so a lot of these other dictators are kind of hoping they could pacify the people before anything major starts happening in their own countries.
Yeah, so like the establishment itself of their political process is being threatened. And so in an effort to make sure that the same kind of system keeps on going, they'll say, well, I'll just remove myself and I'll get another puppet in for you. And that'll be very nice. That'll calm you all down, won't it? Oh, thank you so much for loving me. I'm your leader. I'm just so caring.
Precisely, and I think also the powers that be in this situation are also very frantically trying to maintain control over the region and trying to make sure that things do not get out of hand for them.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's precipitous, isn't it? We've got a terrible situation in the entirety of the Middle East. You know, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but the relativism that's been going on, like, oh well, at least you don't live in Saudi Arabia where you get your hands cut off and things like that, as we feel here in the West, it seems to be kind of diminishing somewhat. And it's the Middle East now, during these protests, movements, is now serving, I believe, as a somewhat of an example to the oppressed Western peoples as well.
Definitely. And I think that's one of the things that Western media is being very aware of. And I think that's why they're trying to brand this as an Islamist revolution and as an extremist revolution, because I think they're very wary of the fact that other people in different countries can take from this example and try and create social change with their own hands. I mean, we've already seen a lot of social unrest in Europe and in countries such as Greece and the United Kingdom, where people have come out and protested and put their governments in a very awkward position.
Well, welcome to the global revolution, ladies and gentlemen. Mohammed Hassan, for all your listening pleasure, thanks very much for coming on the show today with us, mate. We'll certainly have you on again sometime.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, yes. And do you have a website there at all?
No, I don't. I have a Facebook page. That's pretty much it for now.
Okay, not a problem. We'll put that up on the archives of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your ears being lent this way today. And we will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.